My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. My guest this week is Morgan Sandler, the author of Visual Storytelling, How to Speak to Your Audience Without Saying a Word, which is available where fine books are sold. Morgan is a professor of digital film production at the University of Laverne in Southern California. He also helped design the digital cinematography program at California State University in Los Angeles, where he served as an adjunct professor. He also previously served as the course director of cinematography at the Los Angeles Film School, where he taught for 10 years. Morgan has spent nearly 20 years working professionally as a cinematographer and camera operator for the film and television industries, which he continues to do when outside of the classroom. Morgan holds an MFA in film, television, and theater from California State University, Los Angeles. So, without further ado, here's the interview. Welcome to the show, Morgan, and thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm excited to be here.
Listen, we're going to be spending a lot of time on your book, which is the visual storytelling. But first, I wanted to hear a little bit about yourself, like when you got started in filmmaking, when and how that all started for you.
Yeah, you know, I've always been interested in film. Growing up, movies, I think for a lot of people, movies were always kind of my escape, my go-to. And so for me, I knew I always wanted to be a part of the film industry somehow, but I didn't really know in what capacity. I guess my first introduction really to working, or at least storytelling as a whole, was in the ninth grade in high school. I had a teacher, and I was kind of, you know, lacking direction, like a lot of teenagers. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, what direction I wanted to go. And I had an assignment in the ninth grade to write a short story, and turned it in, and a couple days later, my teacher asked to speak to me after class, and she said, you know, you really have a great voice as a writer. Have you ever thought about pursuing that? And from that point on, storytelling and filmmaking became my ultimate goal. Yeah. I initially thought I wanted to be a writer and director until I wrote and directed something and realized I never wanted to do that again. That was definitely not the area I was interested in focusing on. And eventually cinematography became my main focus. But yeah, when I was about 17, some friends and I put together the little bit of money we had and the few connections we had growing up in Los Angeles and actually put together a really high quality short film. And since then I've just been going for it.
Oh man. I love your honesty. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I was not the best at communicating with my actors.
Wow. Forget about it. Well, and I mean, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because you've done so many things. Like, you've directed, you've produced, as well as being the cinematography you talk about and camera operator. So with all of that experience in mind, is there any advice you could give to anybody starting out in filmmaking today?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I have this conversation a lot. And in addition to being a filmmaker, as you mentioned, I'm a film professor. And so I'm constantly around people who are trying to break into the film industry. And the best piece of advice I always give them, or at least I think it's the best piece of advice, is to take every opportunity you can get, especially when you're starting out. If somebody asks you to come work on a shoot for free for a few hours or a few days, if you get that opportunity to be on set, take it. When I was young and when I was first starting out, I would shoot every single weekend. I didn't care if I had money or not, and these were the days of film, or at the very least videotape, so we constantly had to scrounge for money. But I was constantly shooting, and the only way to really improve as a filmmaker is to be shooting, right? I mean, if you're talking about making movies, you're not becoming a better filmmaker. So really the goal is to always be shooting and take every opportunity you can get. But to me, the biggest key, the biggest component is when you get those opportunities, make the most of them. I always tell my students, every day I show up on set and I'm the happiest, most positive person on set. Now, that's what I exude. I might not be feeling that inside. We all get to call time at 6 a.m. and we're exhausted and we've had a long night. We don't want to be there, but you never want to show that. You always want to walk onto set being the most positive person there and always having the best attitude. I tell my students that I'm always the hardest working person on set and I always have the best attitude. And really, that's what's kept me working for 20 years.
Wow.
Wow, you know, it's funny that you say that about attitude, and attitude is so huge when it comes to filmmaking. And I remember my mother, who wasn't into film at all, but she made this sort of a life lesson, is that if somebody asks you how you're doing, just tell them you're great.
That's right.
Everything's fantastic. I'm wonderful. You know, because the last thing you want to do is start to lower that energy level around you. And if you start by saying, "Well, I'm feeling crappy today. Oh, this is this and this," and you complain, that it starts to bring that level down, doesn't it?
Exactly. I always say to my students, walk onto set and have a bad attitude and watch how quickly that spreads like a wildfire, especially if you're a department head. For me as a cinematographer, if I've got 10 or 12 people underneath me, they're all going to take on that attitude. But then walk onto set and say you're having the best morning you've ever had and watch how quickly that spreads like a wildfire.
Wow.
And very quickly, you
It
see what
does.
kind of production you want to have.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It picks up. It is like a wildfire. It just wham. Everybody
Absolutely.
starts to feel that energy. Oh, that's fantastic advice. Thank you very much. So, you know, I on this podcast, I kind of preach about collaboration and that filmmaking is truly a collaboration. I hate when I see films that start with a film by so and so. Because to me, it's not a film by a certain individual. It's a film by a huge amount of people who've collaborated to make this piece of work. Do you believe in that? Do you believe that filmmaking, you know, has that been your experience, really?
I couldn't possibly agree with you more. I one of my biggest pet peeves is there are certain filmmakers and well-known filmmakers in the Hollywood industry who love to take credit for every job on set. And that's just not the case. For anybody who's been on a production, there are dozens, if not sometimes hundreds of people working on a film. And to me, the key is always to surround yourself with people that are better than you, people you can learn from.
Ooh.
And also, and I think most importantly, people that are masters of their skill. What are the chances, and this is an example I give my students, and it's kind of ridiculous, but what are the chances you're going to be the best opera singer, race car driver, and downhill skier in the world, right? Probably not good. So what are the chances you're going to be the best writer, the best director, the best producer, best cinematographer, best sound person? You're probably not. There are people who have those talents. You should surround yourself with people who possess those talents because at the end of the day, it is a collaboration. Nobody can make a movie on their own. People claim to, but I have never personally seen anybody make a high-quality film all by themselves.
It's impossible.
Right.
I
And
think
why
it's
would you not want
impossible.
to learn? For me, every production I'm on, I'm learning, whether that be from the director or the boom operator. I'm always learning a new technique. And to me, that's one of the most exciting things about collaboration is constantly learning.
You know, one of the other things about collaboration, I don't know about you, but I've had people who, like a boom operator who came to me with an idea. Hey, why don't you try this? And
Yes.
it's like I went, why don't I? Oh
Absolutely.
man, you know what I mean? The great ideas come from anywhere. So I'm open to hearing from whoever's on set. If you got
Absolutely.
something, some way of doing it better, let me know.
I totally agree. You know, a few years back, I was working on a production as the cinematographer, and I was doing moonlight through a window. And I have my two or three different techniques that I like to use, depending on the tone and the story. But one of the grips who I had never worked with before was nervous to approach me, but he had a suggestion, and it was just a technique I had never even heard of before. He was nervous to approach me. Finally, I could see that he wanted to try something, and so I kind of asked him what's up, and he showed me this technique, and I've been using it ever since. It's my absolute favorite way of lighting moonlight. It doesn't matter if you've been doing it for 2 weeks or 20 years. If you have a great technique, I'm all for trying it.
Isn't that great? Isn't it
It's the best.
great? I just love that. I love learning from everybody.
It's that's what collaboration is all about. That's what storytelling is all about, and what filmmaking is all about. It's an art. You should
Beautiful.
always be learning.
Beautiful. But you know what? It's time to move on to that great book of yours,
All right.
Visual Storytelling. But before we do, I want to give people a little sense of what I thought of the book. So I just, you know, I was very impressed with this book. It breaks down visual storytelling into sizable chunks that makes the information ingestible and therefore memorable. It gives the reader a strong foundation to stand on when embarking on or continuing their journey in filmmaking. That's what I think of the book. It's
Thank you
just,
very much.
it's full of some just great information on storytelling. And what I really appreciated So, okay, you stated in the introduction, I've always seen film as a living, breathing thing that is always growing and changing. This means that no matter where you fall in the filmmaking spectrum, there's always more to learn. This book is a great place to start, and I couldn't agree more. It's a really great place to start. But not only that, it's great for somebody who's been in the business for a while and has been a filmmaker for a while. I've got a bunch of shorts under my belt. I'm going on to my feature, and this book was invaluable. It was wonderful.
Thank you so much.
So can you give us a short description of the book?
Sure. I think you just did a great job of that. But let me give it my best shot. So for me, this book really is intended as a guide for visual communications. As I think everybody knows, or at least most people who are in the film industry know, images carry a lot of emotional weight, right? You can really speak to your audience just by using images. But I think that a lot of filmmakers are not using those images to their full capacity, especially new filmmakers, student filmmakers, but again, a lot of advanced filmmakers as well don't really understand what you can do just by creating a properly composed image or a properly lit image or choosing the right lens, choosing the right camera movement. All of these little ingredients that we think of as givens, they mean something to the audience. Right. And so to me, the whole goal of the book was to give an introductory or intermediate or advanced guide, depending on what level you're at, to using these images, using the tools and the techniques to tell your story to the best of your abilities.
Oh, man. You think I did a good job? I think you did a better job of introducing this book than I did. That's fantastic. One of the things that really jumped out at me from the book, and it's likely because I'm a writer before I'm anything else, and that is the final story that we see on the screen is a 50-50 combination of writing and visual storytelling. Thank you for that. I just cannot thank you enough for that, because it says to me that this, you know, it's obviously important that writing is important to the storytelling, even to the visual storytelling. It has to start on the page.
So to me, it's interesting because, you know, as a cinematographer, visuals are an important part of my life, right? Obviously, right. I've made a career telling stories using images. But what's always interesting to me is that the director and the cinematographer are so frequently praised for the film. But in the reality, you can't make a great film without a great script. It doesn't matter how strong of a director you are. You could have the most compelling images on the screen, but if you don't have the story to back that up, well, you don't have a great film. Yeah. So it all starts with the story, and it all starts with the script. And without having that great script, you really will never have a great film. So to me, the writer deserves praise first and foremost, and that's why I dedicated the first chapter of the book, because again, these visual elements don't matter if you can't tell a story. I've spent 20 years staying up to date on the latest technology, cameras, lenses, lighting, all of the new equipment that comes out. Those are fantastic ways of communicating, but they're not going to write the story for you.
Okay. Morgan, I love you more than ever now. Oh my goodness. You know, and you do. You spend a good deal of time at the beginning of this book, because here in chapter two, you go into basic story structure. I mean, this is pure writing.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it shows just how highly you regard writing as part of the creative process.
Absolutely. You know, this book, it's not the longest filmmaking book out there.
No.
It's not a master class in the art of filmmaking or the art of writing. I just wanted it essentially to be a general overview to get the audience or to get the reader started in how you tell a story, how you write it, and how you bring it to screen. Because I think that's kind of a lost art. So many books focus on just one specific area, which is fantastic. There need to be books like that. But for me, especially somebody who teaches introductory intermediate filmmaking, it's absolutely crucial to me that students and filmmakers as a whole understand the basic components before they try to take on the advanced techniques.
You know, it's kind of like you have to know the rules before you can break them.
100%.
You know what I mean? You have to lay down a great foundation and understand that foundation. And then, it's only then can you say, oh, wait a minute, maybe I'll try something a little different. I'll bend the rule this way.
Absolutely. And you know, that's one of the reasons why I do talk about how to break the rules, especially in the composition chapter. I get into how you break these rules.
Yeah.
But lay the groundwork first, because again, if you start breaking rules arbitrarily and you don't understand why or how you're breaking the rules, you're not communicating correctly, right? You're giving the audience misinformation.
Oh, oh my goodness. You're giving me chills. I'm loving this. People, soak this up and get this book. I don't want to go chapter by chapter, so I'm going to skip the composition.
Okay.
But I want to ask you to talk about the camera as a storytelling tool. Now, I'm from the school that, you know, I'm a director. I'm a writer first, but I'm a director as well. And it's my job to explain my vision to the cinematographer, and they give me what I want. So that's kind of where I came from. And then I read this book, and you say that the director should almost be as knowledgeable as the cinematographer. So why do you think that?
So this is a conversation I love having, because the relationship between director and cinematographer is a very fine line, and it's a constantly moving line depending on the relationship. So there are some directors that I work with that know absolutely nothing about the camera, and they know absolutely nothing about the lenses or lighting, and they go off and work with the actors, and they say, you know, I want this scene to feel scary. Okay, that's fine. That's great for me. It's fun because I get to essentially choose all of the visuals. But if I, as the cinematographer, am deciding on the visuals, then the director, to me, is not fully doing their job, right?
Right.
And to me, you're losing a little bit of control that way.
Okay.
So in my opinion, the director should know their lenses. They should know a lot about lighting, textures, color palette, hard light versus soft light, high key versus low key. To me, lighting and lenses are probably the two most important visual storytelling tools we have. I think lenses are one of the most misunderstood tools we have on set, or at least not well enough understood by most directors. If you look at some of the greatest filmmakers out there, the auteur filmmakers, they all rely very, very heavily on lenses as storytelling tools. So for me, I don't need the director to say to me as a cinematographer, shoot this low angle on an 18 Dutch angle. I don't need that necessarily,
right.
But I at least like to know from them if they see this in a wide angle or a telephoto, if they see it high key or low key, because I'll be able to communicate in that conversation. Now, for me as the cinematographer, I might then say, all right, well, let's try the 18. The 24 might be a little bit too telephoto, so let's go a little bit wider. So I think it's this conversation to me, and it should come organically, but I think in many ways, it's a conversation that needs to happen constantly on set about how to create the perfect frame.
Right. So do you think it goes both ways? Do you think maybe the cinematographer should know a little bit about what the director's doing as well?
Absolutely.
Right? And then it's almost simpatico, right? Like now you're both speaking the same language.
Yes, the overlap between positions on set should be immense, especially a director, cinematographer, editor, and to a certain extent production designer when it comes to lighting and color.
Yeah.
These people should know so much of the exact same information, right? I mean, I think that there really is a huge overlap between all of those categories. And that really, again, with this book, that's why this book doesn't focus specifically on one job,
right?
Everybody has the same responsibility on set, and that's to tell a story visually.
Right.
So that's why the book focuses on that, and why I think the director and cinematographer really should have a ton of overlap.
Right. And you know what? In that overlap, and I'm starting to sort of think about what I'm doing on my project right now, and with my cinematographer, what I'm trying to do is establish a lookbook, and have conversations. You know, here's the feel that I'm looking for. Here's examples of that feel. Here's some color palette. You know, I love the look in the sky, whatever it happens to be. You have to start that conversation pretty early. Is that true?
Absolutely. That comes way before you ever shoot one frame. That's very early in the pre-production phase. When I first meet with a director, we have just a really basic conversation about the look, the overall look and feel of the movie.
Yeah.
I then will start working on my own lookbook. And to me, on set, I call my lookbook my Bible. And I make one for every film, every commercial, every music video I shoot.
Yeah.
I always make a lookbook. The director and I will then merge ours. And I cannot tell you how many times that lookbook has rescued me. A scene just doesn't feel right.
Really?
Something's not clicking. And we go back and we look at it. And we go, this is what it is. This is what we're missing.
Wow. That's, you know, it's so important to have those conversations as early as you can. You know,
absolutely.
It really is, because it if nothing else, it makes for a better film.
That's right. That's right. There's no easy way of making a film.
No.
There's no quick way of making a film, and there's no way of making a film that doesn't require a ton of work.
Yeah, so a friend of mine posted something the other day that just said, there are no shortcuts. None.
So true.
There just aren't. You either in it, and you're slogging through it, and you're getting through, and it's a long process at times.
It is.
Because we're talking about something, before you even shoot a frame, we're talking about sitting down together and saying, okay, what are we going to shoot? How are we going to shoot it? What's the main look? What is the color palette of this? Is there a particular era that you like? Do you want this more filmic? Do you want it sharper, softer? There's so much to talk about.
It's unbelievable. You know, and I've worked with a few directors and filmmakers over the years who like to wing it. They get on set and they're like, I just want to feel it. And that works for some people. I, on the other hand, am incredibly neurotic and organized. So I've got a complete shot list of everything we're shooting down to the lens and the movement. I do a lighting floor plan for every single shot. And you can stray from it. You don't have to necessarily go off of it. But at the very least, it gives you a framework for where to begin.
You've got to give yourself a bit of a roadmap. That doesn't mean you can't take detours here and there, but you got to give yourself that roadmap to the end. And then then you've got again something to come back to if you stray.
That's right.
Wow. Oh man, beautiful stuff. You know, and I because I'm from that sort of that era of a director and cinematographer have these conversations, but it's really the cinematographer's job to give me what I want.
Right.
After reading this book, it's like, wait a minute, I have a lot of the knowledge that you're talking about. And this sort of was a kick in the pants that says, you know, do I have to know what the cinematographer knows? No. But by doing so, does it not make the whole film better? Does it not make the collaboration that much stronger?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You know, and so it behooves, it benefits everyone on set, everyone involved in the film, that there is this overlap.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm learning so much from you. But listen, I think that one of the most important, if not the most important thing, and you mentioned it earlier, about making a film is light. So you explain a lot about key light and fill and backlight and all that's great. But what really I really want to jump to the chapter, like the things that jumped out at me was like hard versus soft light, you know, things like that. So can you give us an explanation of those two types of lighting? I know it's going to be difficult without a visual. But when you might use one over the other.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, just in terms of basic lighting to me is, again, probably the most important visual element we have. When a frame opens up on screen, you know exactly how you're supposed to feel just based on the lighting, if the cinematographer has done their job correctly. And again, they don't always do their job correctly, but the goal obviously is to give the audience as much visual information as possible. So cinematography is probably the most important ingredient, but also the most challenging and complicated ingredient. We spend most of our day on set just lighting or planning how we're going to light. These are why we work 12 and 15 hour days.
Yeah.
The actual shooting process isn't that long. It's the setting up and the lighting that takes so long because it has to be perfect. So for me, lighting is my absolute passion. I do spend all day lighting when I'm on set. But I remember when I first started, how frustrated I was trying to light any scenes. You'd set up a light and it would start to look kind of good, and then you'd set up a second one and it would just wash it out and it didn't match. And so I cannot stress enough how important it is to practice with lighting. Right, it's the only way to really get good. But in terms of different tones and different moods, you know, hard light versus soft light is, and again, this is a conversation, one of the very first conversations I have with any director is, do you see the scene hard or soft? And if they can't answer that question, to me, they need to go back and do a little bit more research because this is a main story tool. So hard lighting, essentially hard lighting is lighting that casts razor sharp shadows, right? The harder, the, I mean, it's not just hard or soft. There's you know, a range in between.
Sure.
You can have lighting that's kind of hard, very hard. But the harder the light, the clearer the shadow will be.
Right.
And the other major tell of hard lighting is it reveals the texture of surfaces. So, for example, if you have a pimple on your face, mm-hmm. right? Hard lighting, the way we see texture just with our eyes is light hits something, hard light hits something, and it bounces off of it, right? So if you have a pimple on your face, the hard light's going to hit that, and it's not going to get past it. It's going to bounce off, which creates a shadow on the other side of that pimple, mm-hmm. which is how we see it. So hard lighting is not very flattering, but it is really good if you're trying to create a level of intensity. Most of the time, hard lighting is used for drama or horror or thriller or mystery because you can create really hard shadows with it. You can create really deep shadows, which a lot of people really like. Now, again, just like any filmmaking rule, these are not hard and fast
rules. Exactly.
You can light romantic comedy with hard lighting. You just have to find the motivation for it.
Right.
Soft lighting is the exact opposite. Soft lighting hides the texture of surfaces. Light wraps around soft lighting. So, it you know, again, same thing with a pimple. Oftentimes, soft lighting is called beauty lighting because it'll fill in all of those little shadows. So soft lighting most of the time is used for romantic comedies, love stories, comedies, things like that. But if you think about the film The Shining, which is one of my all-time favorite Kubrick films, that's a horror movie, terrifying horror movie. Most of the movie takes place in glowing soft light.
That does,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's motivating. So I always tell my students, the number one rule of lighting is it must be motivated and justified.
Right.
Audience members will not be able to pick out what's wrong with your lighting, but they will know that something is wrong.
It's like walking into a room and just knowing something's off.
Exactly.
Yeah, they just know something's off. Yeah, they may not be knowledgeable enough to say, it's the hard light or it's the soft light, but they'll go, something was wrong about that film. Yeah, and you know what? And this is, again, we talk about collaboration, and this is a conversation that you have with cinematographer and whoever's doing lighting. You know, your lighting, there's got to be a lot of people who work on lighting and help you as well. So, you know, you get everybody involved and you say, okay, this is what we have to do. Here's how we're going to light it. You have any questions? You have any comments? And you're going to get a whole bunch of people saying, hey, this is either a great direction, or maybe somebody says, what about this?
That's right.
You know
and
what I mean?
I love those suggestions. I really do. You know, usually I have the same gaffer, chief lighting technician.
Yeah.
I work with all the time. I have two or three that I work with, but one that I primarily really like to work with whenever he's available. And a crew of like 3 to 4 guys and girls who are just phenomenal. And after a while, you really understand each other's style and how to work together. And that makes life so much easier and so much faster.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny, on my last film, my last short film, every time my cinematographer said, let me show you something, I let him show me something.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It was just phenomenal. And now granted, there was a couple times I said, you know, that's a little too far-fetched and, you know, I'd rather stay within what we were talking about. But there were a few times where I went, oh man, that's fantastic.
That's the way it should be. That's the nature of collaboration.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
The cinematographer, you know, at the end of the day, the cinematographer really needs to remember that the cinematographer's job is to bring the director's vision to life.
Right.
It's not the cinematographer's vision. It will always be the director's vision.
Right.
But it's great if for any director who's willing to take the time to listen to their cinematographer, I think that's always a great thing.
Yeah, I give props to Danny McIver, who was my cinematographer. He's a phenomenal guy. Just, it was a great experience. So, you know what? You even go into choosing the time of day to shoot and how it affects shooting. Now, that can really be huge for someone who's choosing natural light for their project. And a lot of indie films are starting to go in that direction.
Yes. I love shooting natural light. To me, there's no
Not everybody
light
does. Not everybody does, though.
It's very challenging. So I have a love-hate relationship with it. I love the way it looks. I love the final product. I hate having to fight.
The time.
But there's really no light source I've ever found that's as beautiful as natural daylight.
Yeah.
Especially bounced, reflected natural daylight is absolutely breathtaking. But there is, I don't know, maybe like an 8-hour chunk of the day or 6-hour chunk of the day, depending on what time of the year it is, where you just can't shoot outside.
Yeah.
If, you know, any time for me between like 10:30 to 11 and 3 in the afternoon is unshootable.
Yeah.
So shoot in the mornings. You know, a lot of times if I'm shooting all natural daylight stuff, call time is before sunrise, and we're building the, you know, the big setups and, yeah. You know, the 20 by silks to get them up in the air and big bounce and yeah, it's beautiful, but it's so time consuming.
It is.
And then we go inside and shoot interiors during that, you know, 11 to 3 part of the day. And then we go back outside in that late afternoon for exteriors again. But yeah, knowing time of day to shoot is absolutely crucial, and direction of sunlight.
Yeah. Yeah. That's still brilliant. Now, okay. So you tackle all kinds of topics in this book, including the essential techniques to drawing the audience's eye, camera movement involving tracking, dolly shots, handheld booms, pan and tilt. But I want to skip to something that I think many filmmakers struggle with, and that's shooting coverage. I certainly don't want you like to describe the whole chapter, but could you give us a sense of what that chapter's about?
So the only thing more complicated than lighting is shooting coverage. After 20 years, I still make mistakes shooting coverage. I think everybody does, whether be wrong eye line, you know, crossing the 180. Okay. It gets easier, but you're never perfect at it. The biggest thing that I always notice is I never shoot enough coverage. And I think a lot of directors probably go through that as well. There's generally, it's either one of two mistakes. You shoot way too much coverage that you don't need, and you waste the whole day, or you just don't shoot enough coverage.
I think I'm in the first group.
That's a much better place to be.
I need that. It's like, you know what, though? There's a point at which you have to say, and it's hard to do it because you can't, you know, you can't look at everything you've shot. You have to check that shot list that you've been using and say, okay, well, I've got 4 ticks on one, which means I've taken 4 different angles or 4 different shots of this.
Yes.
You have to say, time to move on.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes we overcover things. We really do. And a lot of times what that does is it makes us scramble to get coverage on other scenes. And so, you know, to me, the biggest rule for me is read your script 100 times and know exactly what the intent is. You know, and if you've written the script, it makes it a lot easier because you really understand what the characters are saying and what the writer was saying because you are the writer. I for me, it's understanding the intent of the scene. And if you understand what the characters are really saying, not what's coming out of their mouth, but what they're really saying, you understand what coverage you need, right? How emotionally connected should I be to every character in this moment? Does this call for a push-in? Should I dolly out during this moment? What am I trying to make the audience feel? And that really is emotion, really, it should be the guide for your shot list and your coverage.
And it seems to me, like reading through the book, emotion is really about visual storytelling, and that's a component. It's a very important component of visual storytelling.
That's what movies are about. Movies are supposed to make us feel something.
And exactly.
At the end of the day, if they don't, I don't really think they're doing their job fully.
Oh, they're not.
Yeah, it's all about emotion. It's all about creating the emotion we want within the audience. And to me, you know, dialogue's wonderful, but one of the things I'm always trying to get my students away from is constantly using a ton of exposition.
Oh.
We don't need to hear your actors say it. We need to see it happen on screen. Yeah. I want to see it happen. The example I love to give my students is, if you've ever seen a horror movie, in every horror movie, for some reason, there's a teenager walking through the woods in the middle of the night by themselves, which is never a good idea. But you don't need that character to say, boy, these woods sure are scary out here.
Exactly.
Right? You don't need that. If the director and cinematographer have done their job,
right,
the audience knows that the woods are scary.
And sound.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. You put all that together. You know,
exactly.
The right shadows, the right ambience, the right sounds. You put all those things together and you've got the emotion that you're looking for.
That's what storytelling is.
Absolutely. Oh, man. Oh, wonderful conversation with you. My God. This is fantastic. Listen, so a final word on the book and you know, who should buy it? I mean, I know why I wanted to read it and why I chose to read it, but who's this book for ultimately?
So for me, I wrote the book initially as Well, I wrote it out of necessity because I couldn't find a book that I wanted to use in my classroom that covered all of these different areas. Wow. You know, there were directing books, there were cinematography books, there were producing books and screenwriting books, but I couldn't find one that just covered the overall aspects of how to tell a story using images, right, and the importance of story structure. So that's why I wrote it. To me, it started as an introductory guide. And as I went through the writing process, I started to realize, although I knew these things intellectually, I wasn't always necessarily following them myself.
Yeah.
So I found that even for somebody who's been doing it for 20 years, as an introductory guide, it works really well. But if you dig in there, there are so many advanced techniques and principles and rules that I think any level of filmmaker could definitely grow from a book like this. And for me, I'm constantly, you know, my semester ends this week for teaching, and I plan on spending the semester off going to workshops all semester or all winter break, because even after 20 years, like I said, film is living and breathing, right? Yeah. The techniques are always changing.
Yeah.
And so for me as a filmmaker and as an educator, it's important that I do the same.
Well, think about it. What we used to call film, and we still do,
yes,
rarely used.
Hardly ever.
You know, it's scary. It's just that's how fast things change.
And it's only getting faster. Every day there's a camera out there.
You even mentioned videotape. And editing on videotape is just absolutely abhorrent. It's just terrible. So, I mean, isn't it nice that that's no longer something to worry about?
It's wonderful. And you know what I love about it is it's kind of done something wonderful and something terrible at the same time, which is it's given everybody the ability to become a filmmaker.
Right. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Which is a curse in one
way.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
But it's also such a blessing because people who have these incredible voices now are having the opportunity to be able to tell their stories, and I absolutely love that.
Well, I mean, your classrooms are filled with people like that.
Absolutely.
That just want to tell their story.
Exactly. And I have so many first-generation college students and first-generation American students. You know, I'm in Southern California.
Yeah.
And so we have a very high Latino population in our university,
mm-hmm,
and they're telling stories that people haven't been telling up until now. And, you know, we just had a girl who she just graduated and did a senior project about a young woman who comes to America and tries to start a life for herself and has a family and ends up being deported at the end of the film. And it's a really powerful film. So I love that now students or young people are getting the opportunity to tell these stories that aren't being told.
Isn't that important, though? I mean, it's so important. So that's something we should mention right now to anybody who's out there who thinks, I've got a story to tell. They're unsure of how to tell it. If there are people who know they want to use film or they want to use the visual media, but there are some who are on the fence about it. Visual Storytelling, this book by Morgan Sandler, is a great place to start. And because of today's technology, you can tell that story.
Absolutely.
You know, there's nothing stopping you from telling that story.
You can do it on an iPhone.
Yeah, you can. Now, you know, not a lot of people are, but you can.
You know,
everybody has a camera in their pocket now. When we all used to have these little Instamatics, and then we had to, you know, wrestle with big VHS cameras. And,
yes.
You know, everybody can take shots now. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. So, yeah, that's fantastic. And again, I'm going to put a link to where you can get Visual Storytelling, the book, in my show notes. But before we go, I've got my final three questions I ask every guest. So I'm going to start with, what is the biggest filmmaking mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
Oh, boy. I've made just about every mistake you could possibly imagine.
I like the start. Oh. You know,
I always tell my students, as a filmmaker, you're going to make mistakes. What'll make you a great filmmaker is not making the same mistake twice. And so I've made dozens of mistakes, but I think the most, maybe not the biggest, but to me, the one that stuck with me the most was a very early film I was shooting in Brooklyn, New York. It was a short film. I was probably 20 years old. I was a cinematographer, and we had this scene where a woman's walking down the sidewalk of Brooklyn, and she walks up the front steps to a building, and it's her boyfriend's house, and she's going to break up with her boyfriend. And I decided that there needs to be just a pool of red light shining on this woman because she's so angry and enraged. Right. And I thought it looked really cool.
Wow.
I always tell my students, cool is the last thing you want as a cinematographer, right? You always want it to be justified and be believable. But the director walked up to me as I'm lighting this scene, and she said, where's that red light coming from? And I said, pointed to the light, and I said, well, it's coming from that light I got up there. I think it was a 350, and it's shining down.
Yeah.
She said, no, in the story, what's creating that red light? Because we don't see anything red. It's not motivated. The audience is instantly going to feel that it's not motivated. And she was spot on. That was the first time I really learned that you can't just throw in all these different party colors whenever you want. You have to motivate your lighting.
That's right.
So to me, it might not have been my most detrimental mistake. I could tell you some stories about those. But this, to me, was the most important mistake I think I ever made. And it's really stuck with me ever since, you know, 20 years later.
Intent, intent, intent.
Absolutely.
Wow. So what is the best filmmaking advice you ever received?
Oh, geez, the best filmmaking advice I ever received. I don't know. That's a tough one. I think probably it's the same advice I give everybody else, which is just to give 110%, to always show up, always be on time, and always have the best attitude. I was told that very early by a filmmaker, and it stuck with me as well. And I think that, to me, is the most valuable thing I ever learned is work ethic.
You know what? It you need it in this business. Like, it's gonna chew you up if you don't. If you got, and attitude is everything. You're right.
That's I always tell my students, we live in Southern California. There are a million people who want your job when you finally make it onto set. So why are they gonna keep you there and not replace you with somebody who's willing to work harder?
Well, something I've said on this very program many times is that don't be a dick. Just be nice.
Exactly.
There is nothing wrong with going on set and being nice.
I totally agree.
Who would you rather work with? Somebody who has this hissy fit and yells and screams and swears, or someone who just calmly talks to you about, well, what's the problem? Let's see if we can figure it out.
Couldn't agree more.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're so fortunate to get to do what we do and to be on set. We're doing what everybody dreams of doing. And so to not enjoy that, to not slow down a little bit and enjoy that moment, to me makes no sense.
Oh, I love that. Slow down and enjoy the moment. That's when you get a chance because, you know, as we've said, there's this high work ethic involved.
Yes.
You're always moving, always doing something. But you have to remind yourself, look what I get to do.
That's right.
Isn't this amazing? Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So here's the toughest question of all.
Okay.
Name a film that inspired you.
Ooh. Okay. So. these are probably the toughest questions so far.
It is. It is a tough question because there's so many, right? And you can name three.
You know, I would say my two favorite filmmakers who are polar opposites are David Lynch and Wes Anderson. They're my absolute two favorite filmmakers.
Wow.
Me, Blue Velvet. When I first time I saw Blue Velvet was a revelation.
I had never
seen anything like it before.
Yeah, that was not, you didn't see anything like that before at the time.
Never. And anything by Wes Anderson. I mean, you look at his color palette, his style.
It's amazing. Film is so different.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like in that flavor, he's got this different flavor for each one. It's fascinating.
Absolutely. And to me, that you look at Wes Anderson, and that's an example of a director who knows cinematography.
Right.
And then if I had to pick one specific film, probably The Graduate. I think The Graduate, for me, just epitomizes what 70s cinema was about, or late 60s cinema.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that isolation and loneliness, I think, is just so beautifully told.
Wow. You talk about emotion. Whew.
That's an
emotional film. You know,
it sure
especially
is.
especially that scene at the end and they all run away. Okay, we can't go into that, but that's a great film. That's a great end. Talk about storytelling, visual storytelling.
Yes.
There are some great scenes in there, like the scene where like the dirty two scene with him and her fixing her stocking or whatever, like just
it's
memorable
amazing.
Scenes.
Mike Nichols is a genius.
Oh, wasn't he though? Just great. Great stuff. Well, listen, we have come to the end of this interview, and I can't thank you enough. This has been so good.
and I loved every second of it. This was an absolute blast.
I'm telling you, man, this was great. And people have to pick up your book. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes to where people can pick it up on Amazon. It's well worth a read, folks. You got to do it. So, what's next for you? Where can people find out about what you're doing and what you're up to?
Oh, let's see. You know, I'm full-time professor at the University of Laverne, so that takes up most of my time.
Right.
But I do a lot of speaking engagements. Usually I go and speak every year at the NAB BEA conference in Las Vegas. I was just in London speaking at a conference there. But yeah, so, you know, anybody who's interested in kind of ever hearing to come hear me speak, feel free to get in touch with me. I would be more than happy to answer any questions anybody has, whether they've read the book, have any questions about it. Always, for the listeners, feel free to send me an email. I'm happy to connect with any one of you and give you any advice I can.
So you want me to drop your email into my show notes?
Yeah, that'd be great.
I will do that.
Thank you.
Morgan, what can I say? Just so informative. Wonderful talking to you. And I wish you luck on anything you do.
Thank you so much, Ian. Again, this was an absolute blast. I really enjoyed getting to chat with you.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking. And on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.